characters throughout my...
Okay, we're recording now. Let's warm up a little bit with your youth. You were born around here, weren't you? Was it Moraine State Park, as I recall?
No, I was technically born in Newcastle, but at a very early age, I moved to Forestville, which is north, east of Slippery Rock, and then later moved to Worth Township, which is near Moraine State Park, and grew up there.
For the sake of this book, could you give us your age, if you don't mind?
I'm 52.
Okay. So you were born what year,
Bob? I was born 1930.
Okay. So you were born in the Depression. You moved out to the farm. Where was that now?
At Forestville.
Forestville. Okay. What's your early memories of Forestville?
Forestville was essentially a farming community by that time. It had formerly been a coal mining town and a limestone mining town, but by the early 1930s it had become primarily agricultural. Because of the early mining background, it was a town just about evenly divided between Southern Europeans of Italian descent and old original WASP residenters, such as my ancestors, who had been there since 1797.
Oh, could you tell us about the relationship between the foreigners and the WASPs?
There were still occasional areas of sensitivity when I was growing
like
up.
Like what?
Well, there were two churches. There was a Roman Catholic Church, there was a Methodist Church. Mm-hmm. There was a certain competitiveness involved there. But I would say by the time we're moving into the 1940s and 50s, through a variety of cross-cultural contacts, especially intermarriage, those lines were being erased, I think, pretty rapidly. But in the 1930s, I would say that the racial bias or ethnic bias was still evident in the community.
Okay.
I can remember one area in which there would have been some areas for conflict. It was Prohibition times, and of course the Italian residents made their own wine, sold a little of it, were occasionally arrested for bootlegging, and you had a rather strong prohibitionist sentiment among the original folks, and they felt that this is another sign sort of the lack of morality on the part of the foreigners.
You went to school in Forestville?
Never went to school in Forestville. We had moved from Forestville, and I went through most of my elementary years in one-room schools in Worth Township, two different ones.
Where's Worth Township?
Worth Township is due west of Slippery Rock. I went first to Center School, which is near the little community of Jacksville, and then finished out my 8 years. With one exception, one year I did live with my grandmother, who needed somebody to live with her in Newcastle, and went to Newcastle schools, but finished out the remainder of my elementary years, except for seventh grade, at Wolf Creek, a one-room school right on 108 near what is called Moore's Corners.
Where's 108? Which is 108?
Goes towards Newcastle, out of Slippery Rock.
Yeah. Okay. Where's Moore's Corners?
That is now where the Patterson Furniture Store, Frozen Custard
Stand.
Moore's, M-O-O-R-S.
Yeah.
An early family there by the name of Moore settled there.
Okay. Well, I've got some discussion on one-room schools, so I won't go into that. I've got to get into something new, you know. I can't be always repeating myself. So I suppose, let's see. You were a young boy when the Redfoot was discovered to be the murderer of Sidley, Howard Sidley. What do you remember about that?
I can remember that I liked Bill Redfoot.
You knew him?
Yes.
Is that right? Good, that's good. Tell me about, describe him physically.
Bill Redfoot was, I'm not sure what height, because I was very young when I knew him. I was about four. It's when we were still living at Forestville before we moved away from Forestville.
Uh-huh.
In fact, it was depression times, jobs were hard to come by, and he often worked for my father as a day laborer on the farm.
Oh. How big was he?
I would say Bill was 5'8", 5'9". Not heavily built.
Uh-huh.
I can remember that he had a rather heavy beard.
Was he stupid, or was he the sort of guy who could be easily led by Blondie Hoffman? What kind of guy was he?
I think so. And Bill had a drinking problem, which might well have played a role in his role as a murderer. Although I'm not sure stupidity, because the fact that he escaped detection for so long is maybe a pretty good indication of his slyness. Because he kept very, very quiet about it for
how
a long
they,
period
how did
of time.
They found it out.
They found it out by, first of all, Bill was jailed, I believe, for drunkenness. They were already suspicious of him. He was jailed for drunkenness and in the Mercer County Jail. The state police then planted a state policeman in his cell as Bill would suppose, just a fellow prisoner. And through some very skilled conversation guiding, the state police finally got Bill to brag about his having killed somebody. I perhaps got ahead of the story there. It's been a number of years since I've thought about this. But what caused them to arouse suspicion was, in a drunken state one night at a local bar, and I'm not sure where the bar was, a fellow made Bill very angry. Bill was drunk, and Bill said, "I'll kill you, and you wouldn't be the first person I've killed." That word spread, and the state police then jailed him on some minor charge, and then planted
That's
a state
good.
Policeman in his cell to gradually evoke
that did
the
not
concussion.
Come out in the Mercer newspaper of the time.
Oh,
I didn't
really?
Know this. All they do is they mysteriously say, on a tip, he was arrested.
That was the tip, that he had threatened to kill somebody and said that he had done so before.
Did you ever see Blondie Hoffman?
No, only photographs.
Mm-hmm. I'll see
she had, I think, there seems to be little question, though, as I remember, even though I was quite young, hearing my parents and others discuss the trial, that Bill's getting off with murder second, I believe it was, even though he actually wielded the axe or hatchet, whatever it was on the basis of her past reputation. Which was as a rather loose hoodlum type of operator.
Hoodlum, even.
Yes, rather unsavory
character. Not just sexually
character.
Unstable, but hoodlum.
Yes, apparently in other ways, too. There was a lot of character witnesses against her, and a lot of character witnesses for Bill.
Yeah, I see. Oh, interesting.
And
you know,
she got murder one.
And did you know she eventually went insane?
No, I didn't.
About 12 years later.
I didn't know.
Yeah, it was in the paper. At least she got herself committed. I don't know. Who knows? But maybe anyway.
I've often wondered if she's living or dead.
Yeah.
I know Bill is out.
Oh, he is?
Yes.
Oh.
Bill's been out for a number of years, but probably because of his past and so forth, he has not come back to the home area other than for short visits, I understand.
Oh.
I've never seen him, but I know he has been back. But the last time I heard, he was living peacefully and apparently honestly in the Pittsburgh area.
Yeah, and so is Janice Graham. Are you familiar with the Wilson murder case?
Yes.
Janice Graham lives around here. In fact, I've really wondered. I hope she's not going to get mad at me for bringing the whole thing
up again.
But, you know, I gave this talk at the Lions in London, and a guy told me later on that he had talked to a relative of hers, and they took it calmly. They said, "Oh, that's just one of our relatives," so... I hope I don't get any phone calls in the middle of the night, you know, you dirty so-and-so.
No, I didn't know. I wasn't aware she was around here at all.
Well, anyway, speaking of the Wilson murders, do you know anything about them?
No. The only reason they even stick in my memory at all is because my grandfather owned a large apple and peach orchard, probably only about 4 or 5 miles away from the Wilson farm. And again, I was young and I remember them discussing it because my grandfather did know the family and so forth. But, and I know where the farm was located, I still know where it's located, but I knew none of the Wilsons.
Uh-huh. Well, you know, there's gossip around, not much talk, but the suggestion something was wrong there, that there was hanky-panky or legal fumbling around to suggest somebody got off who shouldn't have. You don't know anything about that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Well, I think Mr. Wilson was a fairly influential person in the community.
Mm. Well, you know, he was sleeping with the girl, what's her name? Yeah, Janice Graham. And he refused to testify. I mean, never did come back. They actually, I think they gave him a year in jail or something. And other people in Mercer feel something stinks about that whole case. Mm-hmm. But, well, that's another story. Let's see, what else happened in the 30s we could mention? What about World War II? Where were you living during the war?
I was living on the farm in Worth Township. World War II had a very deep and lasting impression on me. I don't know why. I was young. I was only 9 in 1939. But every major event of World War II, I can tell you to this day, precisely what I was doing and where I was at the moment I received the news.
Oh. Where were you on Pearl Harbor Day?
Pearl Harbor Day, I got up, went to church. We did our chores first, as you always must do on the farm.
Uh-huh.
Went to church, and then we decided to visit relatives in Forestville, where we had formerly lived. After that, an old tradition on Sunday afternoons, while you're taking a drive, was to go to the ice cream factory in Harrisville.
Oh, really?
We pulled in front
of the
factory?
Where's that factory? You don't mean that grocery store that sells a lot of ice cream on Sundays today, do
That's
you?
That's it.
Oh,
it's,
they make
it's
their
known,
own?
They make their own. It's known as the ice cream factory.
With capital letters? How would I spell it when I write it out?
I-C-E-C-R-E-A-M-F-A-C-T-R-Y.
In
yeah.
Okay, okay. They call that the...
It's known as the ice cream factory. The Hughes family have owned it for a couple generations.
Okay.
But we pulled up in front of there, and a great uncle and great aunt of mine pulled up and rolled down the window beside our car and said, "Isn't it terrible?" And my father and mother, I'm not sure who, responded, "Isn't what terrible? What has happened?" And they said, "The Japanese have attacked Pearl Harbor." That was Sunday afternoon of December 7th. And, of course, we were numb, I guess, and they gave us whatever tales they'd picked up off the radio. We rushed home after that and, of course, turned our radios on and then listened to the news coming in and wondering what the future brought.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm. What the future brought for me very personally, and I can get so emotional about this, I hope even in an impersonal situation like this I can handle it. But I had a cousin, a very, very dear cousin, like some young boys will pick out a role model.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I had done this with a cousin of mine by the name of Joseph Geary. He had been drafted into the Army even before the beginning of the war and was serving. He had married at the same time, and when he came home on furlough from the military, he almost always stayed with my parents. Rather really than going to his own home, he would bring his wife to my parents' place and would spend at least part of his furlough there. I admired him very much, and as I said, he sort of became my role model, and he was killed in France.
Oh. What was his name?
30 years.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
Joseph Geary. He was a staff sergeant, and there happens to be a local man who still lives here who was with him when he was killed.
Oh.
He was hit by a sniper's bullet at the siege of Cherbourg.
Oh. By the way, are you related to the Kelly in Grove City who got the Congressional Medal of Honor?
No.
As a matter of fact, he was at Cherbourg. Oh, I wondered. Do you know that? Did you know the family, who, the guy who got the Congressional Medal?
Not from Grove City, no, yeah. I didn't know.
I forget his first name.
I remember this, another event that, again, before the war, it was the first American ship sunk by a U-boat. The USS yeah. Reuben James uh-huh. was a destroyer, and there were two crewmen on that from Grove City who were killed.
Yeah.
And that was several months before our entry into the war.
Do you remember their names by any chance?
I can remember one name, and I'm not sure why. Jack Huff.
Jack Huff, all right. I didn't get that in my history. I didn't see that.
Yeah, there were two uh-huh. Grove Cityites.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, let's stay on the war. There's no reason to jump right into the college. What did you, where were you living? Always on the farm?
Always on the farm throughout the war. Two other events, as I say, they're so deeply imprinted on my mind. We had to haul our milk. We shipped milk. We had to haul our milk to a neighboring farm every morning. And again, you don't have time in the morning on a farm to turn on the radios or
yeah.
whatever to find out what's going on in the world. And so we were up about 5:30, did all of our chores, had the milk loaded up, loaded it in the tractor, and took it to the neighbor's place to be picked up by the truck. And it was the milk truck driver who jumped out of the truck again and said, "They've hit France."
Oh.
In June of
yeah.
1944.
Right,
44. Yeah. And so again, we rushed home, turned on the radios to find out what was happening on D-Day.
Uh-huh.
Maybe even more bewildering was in August of 1945. We were out making hay, and we were coming in the driveway towards the barn. Father was driving the tractor, I was on top of a load of hay, and suddenly my mother came running out of the house as we drove past the house, and she says, "Something has happened," and she says, "It's all confused, but we dropped some kind of a bomb and we wiped out a whole Japanese city."
Oh.
She didn't know what it was called. She didn't understand how any bomb
yeah.
could eliminate a whole city, but that was the bomb drop in Hiroshima.
Well, that's good. That'd be a good story. You remember on D-Day, one thing that struck me about Mercer was that seemed more the most important event of the war. People prayed, they went to church, and when the war came to an end, big deal. D-Day seems to be in the most frightening, and we're kind of in the balance whether or not we're going to win the war. Do you remember that feeling, or what happened?
D-Day, to me, again, remember, I was isolated. I was not in big communities with large numbers of people.
Yeah.
We were sort of by ourselves back on the farm. I would say the reaction in the small circle of friends that I knew was one of, we are happy it happened, but God knows what it's going to bring in terms of losses of friends
yeah.
and what have you. It wasn't elation. D-Day
no,
wasn't
that's
elation.
Right. That's
it wasn't
right.
elation at all.
It was real uncertainty.
Yes.
Wasn't it? Yeah, that's right.
I would say it was even limited elation in April of 45 when Germany surrendered. The one thing I can remember, I was attending high school here. It's now the education building, and we were all called down to the auditorium, and the radio and loudspeakers were turned on, and we listened to the newscasts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There was joy, but it wasn't, again, totally unrestricted
yeah.
or without reservation.
Yeah.
That came with Japan,
uh-huh.
the surrender of Japan.
So there wasn't any victory parades or anything?
Not in VE Day. VJ Day, there was dancing in the streets.
Mm-hmm, yeah. Oh, around here?
Oh, yes. Slippery
oh,
Rock.
I like to hear
Slippery
that.
Rock had dancing in the streets.
No kidding.
Yes.
Did they have bands?
Yes.
Uh-huh. Slippery Rock.
Yes.
Did the high school band play or the college band?
Remember
that?
No, I don't, because it was a strange situation. I did all my celebrating VJ Day at a summer resort on Lake Erie. Cellar of my aunt's and my mother had rented a cottage
mm-hmm.
for a week, and they and their children all went up there together, and that's when VJ Day occurred.
Oh, I
Now, I had some nice beach parties because by that time I was in high school and could enjoy a little more adult entertainment, so I had some nice beach parties, but I was not in Slippery Rock actually during VJ week.
Okay.
But I have been told that there were, my father was home alone by himself running things, so he came up and enjoyed the festivities, but I didn't.
Well, what did you do as a boy during the war to participate in the war effort, like scrap drives? Was there much going on? Or you were on a farm, of course.
But I collected a number of things. We purchased saving stamps. There was competition between grades.
Yeah, I remember that.
You bought the stamps for either 10 cents a piece or a quarter a piece. You paced them in a book. When you had 1875, you transformed it into a bond. Mm-hmm. There was competitions. We all did that. There were collections. On the farm, I collected milkweed pods and sold them. They were used in Kapok life jackets.
What scrap? Did you collect scrap?
I collected, when the 1 year that I went to Newcastle Junior High School, there was a competition for collecting metals. And I remember another youngster and I won some sort of a prize recognition. I think it was a certificate or something, because he had a relative who had been collecting keys, and you won by weight. So this gentleman had been collecting keys practically all of his lifetime, and we brought in sack after sack of discarded keys, and we weighed up heavier than anybody else, so we won the special recognition of bringing in the most scrap metal. Rationing was maybe an interesting sidelight. There was, of course, sugar rationing. The way my mother handled that was to give each member of the family a can, which she painted up and made it look a little fancy, but it was really just a coffee can. And we got our weekly allowance of sugar. Now, if you wanted to have one mad orgy and sugar up and ruin all your sugar for the week or waste it all, that was all right, but you didn't get any more.
Mm-hmm.
You had to discipline yourself. You got one can, one coffee can full of sugar per week. There was meat rationing on the farm. Of course, we did all our own butchering, so we weren't much affected by that.
Yeah.
Gasoline rationing was interesting because it gave me certain advantages in the dating field.
Why is that?
Farmers had what was known as an R stamp. There were A stamps, B stamps, C stamps, and R stamps. And as a farmer involved in producing food for the war effort, you got more gasoline than anybody else.
Oh, I see.
And so as a young man just learning to drive, I then had a little more gasoline to use in my father's car and to go dating more often the town boys who only had an A stamp.
Oh, I see. You know, there were so few cars in Mercer, they turned off the traffic lights. Do you remember that kind of... Did it seem like the roads were deserted?
Well, certainly at that time, it wasn't that noticeable to me.
Mm-hmm.
But if you would be able to compare today's highway traffic with then, yes, they were certainly deserted.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You remember the... it was said in Mercer that they stopped people on the road to ask them where they were going. Is this trip necessary? And the farmers stopped coming into town because they were afraid that would be regarded as an unnecessary trip. Do you remember that business?
I don't. I could see. Mm-hmm. Given the atmosphere that I do remember, though, that wouldn't surprise me. I don't remember.
What atmosphere was that?
The atmosphere of self-discipline that everybody had, of unity, of cooperation, of, you know, we're all in this together. We will all sacrifice accordingly.
People did feel that way.
Oh, they definitely did. Uh-huh. They definitely, there was a spirit.
There was
in World
no opposition
War II.
To the war.
I didn't encounter any. There was before our entry.
Yeah.
There was a lot of.
How'd your father feel about isolationism?
My father was pro-isolationist, very definitely. America for Americans, the American arsenal idea.
Uh-huh.
Let Europe play idiots if they want to. Let's not involve ourselves.
When did he change? Did he change before Pearl Harbor at all?
Not until Pearl Harbor. I would say in among the more conservative elements locally, there was a very strong belief that Franklin Roosevelt very skillfully maneuvered us toward that war.
Yeah. So your father was a Republican?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And your mother too, you were a...
Yes.
How'd they feel about the New Deal?
Much better today than they did at the time. Mm-hmm. In retrospect, they're not nearly as opposed. In fact, my father's a rather strange case. Maybe I am too, because I think we both started out from a very conservative base, and even though he's in his 70s today, I think he's much more liberal in his 70s than he was in his 20s. But it is, this is interesting, I think, about my father. He would under no circumstances have ever accepted any government welfare or relief in any form.
Is that right?
The reason we were on a farm in those years was because he had quite a good job with the Western Electric Company, which is an affiliate of Bell Telephone, AT&T.
Yeah.
But of course, with the coming of the Depression, he was laid off. So we went to the farm for subsistence purposes, really, to start out with. But he also, rather than accept anything, he sold products from door to door. I remember one especially because he got an award for selling more than anybody else in three states or something like that. The company was named Zanol. I don't think it exists
anymore.
Can
you spell it?
Zanol.
Okay.
And it was sort of like Raleigh Company, Jewel T, something like that. But they came out with a type of composition sole and glue, very reasonable, that you could resole your own shoes.
Oh.
People neither had the money to buy shoes
yeah.
nor to go to a professional repairman.
Yeah.
So for a few cents, they could buy this sole
yeah.
and glue it on and get through for maybe several weeks that way.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a hot seller.
It was a good item to sell in the Depression.
Yes.
So your dad was dead set against FDR and the New Deal. How did they feel about Britain, or the Battle of Britain? Was there any sympathy there? Did that change anything? Or was he still pretty much...
I think there was sympathy at the human level. But I still, as I recall, I think he felt that was a European problem brought about by European error and mistakes,
yeah.
and we ought not to involve ourselves.
What about Japan? Do you remember if he had any views on Japan?
Well, that happened so suddenly.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I do remember this, which may be a little bit of a hint towards an attitude, maybe not any strong feelings, but during the Depression, my parents had very little money, but my mother always believed, for reasons that I won't go into, that Christmas should be a very special day.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
She had not had Christmases as a youngster,
yeah.
and so she was determined that her children would have the very best Christmases possible. And so, no matter how tough times were,
mm-hmm.
we enjoyed a good Christmas.
Yeah.
And I can remember Christmas time, then going through the stores and lifting up every item that they might be considering
made
buying to see if it were
yeah.
made in Japan. If
I
it were,
that.
They would not buy it.
Good. Oh, yeah. It was a kind of a boycott, huh?
Yes,
yeah,
because so many people unemployed here, they were not
yeah.
going to buy goods from
Oh,
Japan.
That's the reason. It was
yeah.
unemployment.
It's unemployment primarily.
It was not against their policies in China.
No, not really. Not that much.
Uh-huh. Okay. Let's see. Did you see Wendell Willkie when he came through here in 1940? You know, he was at Sharon. He spoke at Sharon.
No, I didn't, but... do you also know that Alfred M. Landon launched his career
yeah,
at West
yes.
Middlesex?
Did your parents go? Did you see him by any
no,
chance?
No, but I can certainly remember wearing sunflowers.
Oh, yeah.
I was the only Republican in the little one-room country school I attended, and that was not easy. Believe me.
Oh yeah.
Everybody for Landon wore sunflower pins.
Uh-huh.
Some of them were felt. Some of them were all metal. But the Kansas sunflower was the symbol for Alfred M. Landon.
Uh-huh.
Might add something, you didn't ask me this question, but I think it's an insight into the times. and it relates to my father's refusal to take any government aid. My paternal grandmother, one time, just making idle conversation with a child, and this was when I was in first grade, she looked at me and she says, "Well, Donnie, what do you want to do when you grow up?" And I can remember it very clearly, and I thought about all of my experiences and my friends' experiences, and I said, "Grandma, I want to work for the WPA." And she laughed. And she pushed me a little further. And the situation was, what caused me to come to that decision was, practically every one of my fellow students in this little one-room country school, their fathers existed by working for the WPA.
Oh, I see.
I was frankly a little ashamed of my father because he didn't work for the WPA. So I thought the height of human aspirations would be to work for the think about things like this too. Other people don't always.
Yeah. But you know, it's funny, some people you ask them, "What did you do?" And all they can remember is one or two things in their whole life. Other people remember everything and see things. Well, now let's see, where were we now? The New Deal, and I guess we've covered that pretty well. Do you remember any soldiers around? Do you remember the Camp Reynolds? Did you ever get up to Camp Reynolds?
If you don't mind my becoming a little crude, I can tell a story about Camp Reynolds. Well, first of all, I had encountered many of the prisoners of war. After Camp Reynolds shut down as a debarkation point, it became a prisoner of war camp. And most of the prisoners housed there were from Rommel's Afrika Corps.
Oh, is that right?
And at that time, Slippery Rock College was training navigators for the United States Air Force. And so there were Air Force, then it was the Army Air Force, it was not separate. There were Air Force personnel on this campus, as there were Naval personnel at Grove City campus studying to be radiomen.
Yeah.
So there were... The government had jobs to perform on this campus with regards to housing and what have you.
Yeah.
And so they used to bring, when I was a kid in high school, they brought these Afrika Corps veterans down here on campus in work groups.
What year was that? 44 or 45?
44, 45, yes.
Okay.
And so I used to virtually bump into these fellows right here on campus.
Oh, you met them, huh?
Yes. I might add something here. I had only heard rumors of Hitler's master race theories and so forth.
Yeah.
And I have been told since that the Afrika Corps was a rather special army of selected personnel. But I almost became a believer in the German master race theories. These were very handsome young men, rather large, almost all of them. They were impressive human figures. Now, the other incident's a little gross, but it's maybe amusing, and, you know, there's all kinds of history, so I'll throw it in.
Okay.
As I told you, the week of VJ Day, I was staying at Erie on a short week's vacation. And coming back from Erie, we were traveling down Route 19.
Perry Highway?
Yes, the Perry Highway, near Meadville. I can remember that. I could probably find the spot again today if I were to travel it. And there was a caravan of army trucks all loaded with the POWs from Camp Reynolds. And apparently there was no single restroom facility that could handle this, and they were taking them somewhere, and they needed a rest stop, so that the trucks had simply pulled off to the side of Route 19. There may have been 20 trucks in this caravan, and here is this whole contingent of POWs lined up, you know, of course, relieving themselves along the edge of the highway, and the traffic just continued right on by, you know.
You were impressed with these Germans, huh? Did they talk to you? Were they arrogant? Were they tanned? Is that...
Yes, they were.
Uh-huh. That could have been as early as 43 then, huh? When they surrendered.
Yeah, I'm not. It would be hard for me to pin that down your ways, yeah. But they were here quite often.
Uh-huh. What was their attitude toward you? Would they talk to you? Did you talk to
there
them?
Were, as I recall, there were very few who could speak English, but I communicated a little. There was no sharing of experiences. It was a more an exchange of greetings and that sort of thing, mm-hmm. because they were under guard, of course. Mm-hmm.
Did they try to be friendly, or? Or did they?
I didn't see the arrogance. Uh-huh. You know, I wouldn't want to read something into this that wasn't. They seemed to be happy, though.
Oh, really?
They did.
Uh-huh. I wonder if they're happy to be out of the war.
I'm thinking maybe, as I say, I don't want to read something into it isn't there, but they seemed to be contented. They didn't seem to be ill at ease in this role of being under guard or anything. They seemed relaxed. And maybe you're right. They just were so happy to be out of it.
But you got no Nazism or anything like that?
No, I didn't pick up any of that.
Well, let's see. When did you start... let's keep on with the war, see if there's anything else.
I can think of another incident.
Okay,
if you'd
like. Go ahead, yeah.
It's kind of a strange one. Maybe for the general public it wouldn't be interesting. But all troop movements were top secret. Mm-hmm. Top secret. For the reasons of possible sabotage or something.
Yeah.
Again, I couldn't give you the year, but a cousin of mine who had enlisted on the West Coast, and then he was already married. He was living on the West Coast. He had married there and had been drafted, excuse me, not enlisted, had been drafted. His wife and child had come back to Elwood City, where they were originally from. An uncle of mine happened to be in Connellsville, Pennsylvania, visiting relatives of his there. His relative happened to work at the railroad station. He went down there after work to pick up his relative from his place of employment at the railroad station. He was walking down the platform. Somebody started yelling, "Hey, Red Kennedy, for God's sakes, Red Kennedy." Mm-hmm. And it was a troop train. And he looked up, and it was this cousin from California. He said, "We're going through Newcastle. Call my wife. Call my wife." Oh. Well, my Uncle Red not only called his wife, he called every relative in Western Pennsylvania, practically. He wouldn't have time to get here from Connellsville, but he phoned ahead immediately. We all rushed, including my family. Uh-huh. We rushed to the railway station in Newcastle, not knowing that the train would stop, but thinking even if it would just pass through, this fellow's name was Don, he happened to be my namesake, Don Stevenson, that he could at least wave.
Yeah.
And he was going overseas. And of course, his family didn't even know where he was at this time. They had no idea where he was at. And so we were all there on the platform at the B&O station in Newcastle, and they made a stop.
Where is that located?
At Mahoning Town.
At Mahoning.
It's a suburb of Newcastle.
South suburb?
South of Newcastle. Right.
Okay.
Don jumped off the train.
How do you spell Mahoning Town?
M-A-H-O-N-I-N-G.
Okay. Town, is town one word? Is it Mahoning Town one word?
Yes,
or two
one word.
One word, okay. Go ahead.
Anyway, the train did make a quick stop. Don jumped off, came out, of course, and there was a fantastic reunion of his wife, which you could only imagine, and his little girl, and a quick handshake with everybody, and back on the train.
Uh-huh.
The MPs came off, lined us all up, questioned us, and they held Don for 8 hours once he got back on the train.
Right?
How did that word leak out that he was passing through there?
Oh.
And of course, we explained it just as it happened. It was just a pure, coincidence that he was passing through Connellsville and saw somebody he knew.
Those MPs are pretty alert.
Very alert. Very angry.
Yeah. else happened during the war? Did you ever go up to Camp Reynolds?
Never.
Did you ever see a USO? Did you see the one in Mercer?
No, I didn't know.
Or Gross? Did Slippery Rock do anything for soldiers? Were there soldiers around there? I don't suppose so. Of course they were at the college. Were there
they
soldiers
were here
at the college?
I can't remember any particular social organization that served them, but there didn't have to be, and this might be something to use as a transition, because there was a time in World War II when Slippery Rock State College had 9 men on the entire campus.
Oh, yeah.
And so that meant that there were probably at least 791, thereabouts, unattached women. And so the Air Force personnel were in no great need of social.
No, I don't imagine. Yeah. What was Slippery Rock like, the town, during the war? What are your first memories of the town? Was it a sleepy town? Was it a quaint town? How would you characterize the town of Slippery Rock?
It was very quiet. It had one policeman, Gus Kelly. Gus Kelly was a very humane individual who would much rather give a youngster particularly a talking to, perhaps report him to his parents, than make an arrest.
Yeah.
It was he was a very, very benevolent peace officer, but there was little here anyway to...
Was this your town, Slippery Rock? Did you come in here, or was it Mercer, or where exactly did you go?
Since I went to school here after ninth grade, then my social circles tended to focus.
So you're a Slippery Rock guy, kind of.
Yeah. This is just another strange, but having gone to Newcastle to school for 1 year, I also had connections there. Before I had driver's license, and before it was perhaps dangerous to do so, I often hitchhiked. For my social outlets. And I have been known to do this, to walk out onto 108. My farm was 2 miles from 108. I would
in
walk.
Which direction, north or south of 108?
We were south of 108. I would walk out to 108.
Yogi Bear, isn't that? Is that where Yogi Bear is?
Do you know where Rambler's Restaurant is?
Yeah, that's on the other side of the Wolf Creek.
Right, I lived back that.
Oh, I see.
But I would go out to 108 as a young man looking for fun. And if there were a car coming towards Slippery Rock, I would stand on the right side of the road and bump towards Slippery Rock. If a car would come the other direction, I would go to the other side of the road and bump towards Newcastle. And whoever picked me up first, that's where I end with my evening, either in Newcastle or Slippery Rock.
So you did come into Slippery Rock. What did you do for entertainment? What was there for a young boy to do in Slippery Rock? This is during the war, right?
Yeah, for a young farm boy, not very much. My pleasures were always, for example, having very few near neighbors. I didn't learn to play tennis. I didn't learn to shoot pool. I didn't learn to play basketball. My pleasures were all of the hunting and fishing and trapping varieties, especially trapping became a major...
Even back then?
Yes, very much involved in that.
Well, there was more money to be made in trapping, wasn't there?
Yes, for that period the money was quite good.
Yeah, someone else was mentioning that.
So I didn't involve myself very much other than...
You didn't come into Slippery Rock that much for...
Oh, I came into Slippery Rock pretty regularly, but it wasn't...
Once a week?
Oh, I would say 2 times a week, maybe 3 times. Maybe, you know, that became oftener as I had access to vehicles.
Yeah.
But it was mainly dating, because this is where the girls were. And so
is that right?
It was mostly dating.
Slippery Rock, but you mean the college? Is that
well, not necessarily.
The town.
Although, as a high school boy, I was out with a few college girls when there was that...
Desperate need.
That desperation on their behalf because there were no men here. But no, primarily town girls and classmates and that sort of thing. But there was no recreation centers.
Was there a movie theater?
There was a theater.
What was it called?
The Roxy.
The Roxy.
The Roxy was a center, yeah. And it was constructed in 1939. So in the early 1940s...
You mean there had been no theater before 1939?
Not within my memory there hadn't been.
Did they have adequate sound equipment in 39? The Mercer Theater sound equipment was not all that good for several years, for a decade or so.
Well, I thought the Roxy, for a small town, was in all respects quite an excellent theater uh-huh. into the maybe the middle 50s because it was new. The seating was comfortable
yeah.
and clean, and I've always felt the sound was fine. It by the time it closed down, it had deteriorated seriously. I'm going to sound like an old timer now, but I think by the time the 50s and 60s came along, and I'm not even sure when it closed down now, you know, young people no longer had the respect for
yeah.
property, and they had begun to tear it apart.
Oh, I see. I see. Uh-huh. What else was there in town? Were there ice cream parlors in town? Where did you go? Where would you take a girl in Slippery Rock, aside from the college?
There were two places one could go to get something to eat. Isley's, as it still exists.
Same place, same location?
Same place, same location. Or a restaurant known as Kelsch's.
How do you spell it?
K-E-L-S-H, apostrophe S, Kelsch's.
Okay, where was that located?
Almost across from the Methodist Church.
On
Franklin Street.
Okay.
That would have been a hangout.
Is that near West Groceries?
Mm-hmm.
Was it in that same block where Patterson's TV is now? Or where the feed store?
In that block there.
I couldn't
pin it down exactly.
Okay.
It was right
okay.
in that block, yes. You've got the
okay.
right block.
And
now this was not one of my outlets, but roller skating was pretty big in the 40s.
Yeah.
And a number of people would go roller skating. We had two pretty good rinks nearby.
Oh, where were they?
At Stoughton's Beach or Rock Falls Park.
Uh-huh.
And just another half mile down the road at Etna Springs.
Yeah,
there
Etna Springs is still there.
Yeah,
it?
There were yeah. two operating roller rinks.
Uh-huh.
And,
how'd you get out there all that way to Etna Springs?
Well, you always had to have wheels.
Yeah.
If you lived in the country, you had to have wheels.
Yeah.
Or you had to have an active thumb and you had to hitchhike. There
was,
you know, the distances were just simply too great.
Let's see. What about the Slippery Rock hot dog shop? When did that come in, do you know? That was not there then.
No, it was not there.
Somehow it seems like it's been here for...
That was an appliance store owned by a family by the name of Crawford. This
kind
old Westinghouse appliances.
When did it come in? When did they convert it to a restaurant?
In either the late 50s or early 60s. I couldn't pin it down any more closely than that, Jim.
Okay. Let's see, what else is there about the town to remark about? Was there still a hotel? You know where the First National Bank is? There was a hotel next door. Was there a hotel then in the 30s?
There was for a while, in late 40s, a restaurant in there, one that I didn't name, called the Rocket Inn.
Where at?
Where the Boron Station is now, on that corner. It's
uh-huh.
one of the oldest buildings in Slippery Rock.
Uh-huh.
And the downstairs was a restaurant, and they did board people, not like a hotel, but it was a weekly boarding house upstairs. Some college students lived there. Some vets after World War II lived there.
Uh-huh.
But that, it did not stay open as a restaurant very long. In fact, the person who opened it, I think, was an alumni of the college here.
Uh-huh. How long has the First National Bank been on the corner?
Always within my memory. And by the way, today, in fact, when I conclude this interview, I'm going to the funeral home. The man who served as president of the First National Bank, I don't know, I would say at least 30 years, maybe even more, Ralph McBride passed away. He was 86 years old. And he's an old resident.
What about Huber's furniture store?
That was a combined business before, when Elton's father owned it. It was a funeral home
Is
and
Elton
a furniture
E-L
store.
Is Elton E-L or A-L?
E-L.
Okay.
E-L-T-O-N.
Okay.
It was a funeral home and a furniture store.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, the Ubers have been in business this community for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Probably, I think something like four generations.
Yeah. In this community.
Yeah.
What were the, they had an A&P there, didn't they, where...
The First National is
Doc's Donuts is there now.
There were two grocery stores side by side.
Wow.
An A&P,
yeah.
Friedman and Alper's grocery store, and Friedman's dry goods store.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. Friedman's dry goods store.
Oh, they're out of business.
Yeah. Yeah. They, Jacob Friedman, who started it, began coming into Slippery Rock about the turn of the century as a pack peddler.
Yeah, Jewish. He was Jewish.
Yes,
wasn't he?
Jewish. Mm-hmm. And stayed and finally built a store.
Incidentally, was there any anti-Semitism directed toward him that you know of?
Yes, I'm sure there was.
Mm-hmm.
Much of it, however, I think was a result of insensitivity on the part of the local people, rather than it was malicious.
Yeah, aggressive.
I have heard any number of people, for example, this is not Friedman, the dry good family, but Mr. Friedman, who owned the meat market and grocery store, he also went around and purchased cattle from local farmers and butchered it and retailed it there.
Mm-hmm.
And I've heard people say to his face, you know, talking about a keen business deal, and they would say, boy, Sam, I really Jewed him down.
Yeah, uh-huh. Without really realizing what
yeah,
they're saying.
Yeah,
you
know, it wasn't so much malicious.
Yeah.
But they had been in this community for a long time, and I think they were generally accepted. Mr. Alper, who was in partnership in the grocery store, his sons both played on the basketball team and were quite good athletes, and I think socially fit into the community quite well.
Who were the town leaders? Could you know in the 30s, or is it that was outside of your area?
I was a little young and unsophisticated maybe to be able to analyze that very well at the time. Certainly a man that always seemed to influence a lot of people in town was John Cheeseman, who owned the local Chevrolet Oldsmobile.
Oh, is that always
agency.
Been where it is, Cheeseman Flieger Olds? So.
No, it was originally in a building down where the Little Shopper is now, in that area.
Where is that? Down on
Franklin? On Franklin Street, yeah.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
Oh. When did they go out there on the Grove City Road?
Well, when you pin me down to specific times of these transitions, I'm
it's
not
a post-war
sure.
Building,
yes, it's a
it?
It's a
yeah.
post-World War II
yeah,
building,
that.
Certainly.
Uh-huh. Let's see, what other businesses were around? This is the best.
Well, Bard's store.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
The Bard family, again, had been in this community since the early 19th
yeah.
century. They had a dry goods store. There was Bingham's hardware store,
yeah, heard of that.
Which, again, an old residenter family
is
in the
Fred
community.
Meyer,
no, Bingham's was up. Beside Ord's in that lineup, and the Meyer Hardware store, where it now exists,
yeah.
was the Rogers Hardware, and Mr. Rogers was
that's
Fred's
yeah.
father-in-law.
I see, yeah, that's right, okay.
There was 1, 5, and 10,
mm-hmm.
the Ben
there
Franklin.
Was, there was a Ben Franklin?
Ben Franklin
oh,
store.
Where was that?
Where
located?
The Mellon Bank is now.
Oh, okay. How about that restaurant, the Camelot? Do you know anything about that? Why do they have that millstone in the wall? Is it an old building, or what's
that's
going
a
on?
Very old building. That was originally built by a gentleman named Topley, and it was known as Topley's Terminal Grill. It was the bus stop, or even before there were buses, it was the carriage and dray stop for all links between Newcastle, Mercer, Grove City, and the railroad station at Keister.
I wonder if it could have been a tavern at one time or an inn.
I don't know.
Does it go back
I
that far?
It certainly. I know it was functioning in the early 1920s.
Uh-huh.
I know that. How much earlier than that, I don't know. Uh-huh. But there used to be regular bus services between these towns. And that was the bus station.
Oh, what about the railroad to Redmond? Do you know anything about Redmond?
I know where Redmond is located. I know that it was, I have a photograph of Redmond.
Oh, do you?
In the archives.
Yeah, I know. I got
you
it.
You gave
yeah.
it to me, yeah. But I know that my grandfather, who was a minister, used to go there and preach when it was in its boom days. And I guess that was rather risky business because the miners were not always too receptive to Christianity. But he used to go
when
there
was
and
his
preach.
Boom days? 20s, 10s, 90s?
World War I, about the turn of the century. Uh-huh. It was out of operation, I think, by the 1920s and virtually abandoned.
Uh-huh. How many people lived out there at its peak, do you know?
I couldn't.
Apparently there's no vestiges of it left except a spring house.
A few foundations can be seen. Uh-huh. That's
whereabouts is it located?
If you go out 108 towards Route 8, you turn left on Harmony Road, just before you get to the John Bryden farm.
Yeah.
You know where John Bryden
is?
Uh-huh. You turn left.
Yeah.
And you go up a short hill, and then you'll go down a long hill.
Yeah.
There is quite a valley there, uh-huh, with a pond on the right. At the very bottom of that valley, Redmond was located on both the left and right side of that road.
I was led to believe it's near where my house is.
No.
No. Not between Grove City Road and 258. It's not.
No.
Oh. Okay.
It's out in the valley there.
Okay.
On Harmony Road.
I didn't see it. Yeah. All right. Well, I think we're just about finished here. Well, we got another 10 minutes. We'll have to make another tape if you don't mind. This is first rate still.
Oh, I don't mind.
Okay.
Reminiscing is fun.
Yeah. And next time we can work on Super Rock State College.
Some of my facts are a little vague, though.
Oh, sure. It's bound to happen. How about, and is there anything more we could say about the town? When did they put in the park where the World War II memorial is? What do they call that park? You know, across from the streets.
I was there at the dedication. It would have either been in 1947 or 48, in that time period.
That was when the park was created?
Yes.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. There was always that open area there, within my memory, but there was no monument.
How about paved streets? How many, were there any unpaved streets in the 30s?
There were a number of unpaved alleys.
Alleys.
In the...
But not much streets.
No, the main streets by that time had been paved.
What about the Butler-Mercer Pike? Do you remember when they paved that?
No, not really. I can remember when Route 8 was opened.
Paved?
Yes. No, it had been paved before, but it was widened and made more direct. They cut through many, many hills, as you can see as you go. That was, I'm trying to remember, I think my great-grandmother...
From where to where?
Well, from Butler to Franklin.
That whole section was
yes.
improved. Okay.
And the house, my parents didn't live there at the time, but where they live today and were to move later, it had to be moved, and through the little village of Forestville, the whole complexion of that little village was changed by...
Yeah. Oh, is that
Route
right?
8, yes.
Oh, it's not the way it was then, huh?
No, there was a,
changed?
There were hills in that town.
Oh.
And now, of course, Route 8 goes straight through.
Flat
some houses are up high,
other
houses are down low with fill.
Yeah.
It's quite different.
Oh, yes, that's very true.
One of the last, this is just a little personal thing, but... My great-grandmother died at the age of 90, and I'm trying to remember if it was 1940 or 1941, but at any rate, it was the same time Route 8 opened up. And her last trip in an automobile, my mother went to pick her up to show her the changes.
Oh.
And she absolutely could not believe what this road was like or how they could cut through those big hills or fill in these valleys.
They probably took a lot of the character of the town, didn't they?
Yes,
do you feel that? Did they take
definitely.
The... Do you remember the old stone house in the old days?
I can only remember it. It's about 2.5 walls standing.
Uh-huh.
It was in pretty serious state of decay by the time I remember.
What did people say about that place? Did they have any? Did they say anything about it?
Real old timers who could remember it seemed to have had a suspicion of it as perhaps being a rather undesirable spot to frequent.
Oh, is that right? Why is that?
In the mid-19th century, probably because of the
counterfeiters?
Rings of counterfeiters and so forth.
It was not just one ring, but there was fairly common criminal activity.
At least two different rings of counterfeiters that operated out of there. And apparently, being a place of drinking, it got rowdy occasionally.
Bums may have stayed there overnight, I suppose. So it, not too nice a place.
But I was, there was one man who grew up near there, who spent almost a lifetime bending anybody's ear he could get next to restore that place. His name was Henry Keister.
What are the Keisters in this area? They got Keister Road named after him, Keister Station. Are there still Keisters around now?
The Keisters were a Pennsylvania Dutch German group. There are many Keisters around yet, and descendants of Keisters. Uh-huh. Again, we have a Keister collection in our archives. They were, at various times, you could say they were always farmers, but they were also tavern keepers. On the Pittsburgh to Erie Pike. They were minor politicians. They were justices of the peace. Mm-hmm. They were constables.
Very active.
Yes, and quite active in the community.
Why was that his special pet?
I'm not sure, except he was a man with a very abiding interest in history, especially local history.
So he deserves credit, huh?
Yeah, he deserves a lot of credit. He was a dramatic man with a deep, booming voice. He had been a school teacher most of his life, and he was, again, especially interested in the Mohawk Wigton murder case. And I used to get him to come out and speak to Boy Scout groups.
Speaking of that Wigton murder, was there a local legend about it, or was that pretty well kept alive by these educated people?
There, like everything historical, there are a lot of perverted versions of it.
What were some of the, do you remember a perverted version?
Well, one, they will tell you that he was captured in the Keister House, which is still standing.
Which is the Keister House?
I don't know how to describe